From the KERA Newsroom, I'm BJ Austin. Coming up, Dallas to Houston in 90 minutes. Plans for a possible bullet train are introduced to the public. And a public art project in Dallas is now considered at risk. We'll start today with the latest news on Ebola. KERA's Dwali Saikautau is here. And Dwali, we've just gotten word on the condition of the second nurse diagnosed with Ebola, Amber Venson.
That's right. Emory University Hospital hasn't declared the 29-year-old nurse Ebola-free, but the family has released a statement. Now, Emory hasn't made any public statements about her condition, but the nurse's mother, Deborah Berry, says as of yesterday, Emory and the CDC apparently said they can no longer detect the Ebola virus in her daughter's body. The mom says the family is ecstatic that her daughter is regaining her strength and that Amber's spirit is high, but no word on when or if she'll be transferred out of isolation and back to Dallas. There's a lot of Twitter chat about her recovery at hashtag Amber Vinson.
Now, we've heard a lot about the personal toll Ebola has had at Texas Presbyterian Health Hospital in Dallas, but I understand we got a sign today of the financial toll.
The numbers aren't good. Data shows emergency visits dropped by half and revenue declined by a quarter at Dallas, Texas Health Presbyterian Hospital. Basically, this means that there's been a loss of more than $8 million compared to business over the first 9 months of the year. Texas Health Resources, the parent company that operates Presby, says the negative impact is because the ER was put on a diversionary status, meaning ambulances weren't bringing in clients and doctors sent patients to other hospitals.
Now, in Atlanta, the CDC announced it will start next week a mandatory 21-day monitoring for travelers entering the U.S. from Ebola-affected countries. Here's Tom Frieden, the CDC's health chief.
It's up to the state health department how to make sure that that happens. There are a lot of aspects of feasibility and advisability, but by all means, we will support states in any way they want to do this effectively. We think ensuring that there's a rapid plan to follow up in case people don't report in is important.
So how will this monitoring work, Dwali, and what's behind the move?
Basically, anyone traveling from Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea will be given a kit upon arrival into the U.S., and in it is a thermometer, directions with pictures to help every traveler understand how to take their temperatures twice a day, morning and night, and report their temperatures daily. I believe there's a log that comes with the kit, and travelers must provide emails, numbers, and addresses to local health authorities. The bottom line, says CDC's Tom Frieden, if you have any Ebola symptoms, get care fast to protect yourself, your family, and really to prevent the spread of Ebola in the U.S. These new measures are designed to protect the public and to avoid past mistakes by the CDC, Texas Health, Presbyterian. I mean, officials have admitted to errors, apologized, and they don't want to see a single case of Ebola on U.S. soil. So the plan is to keep training hospital workers and to get the message out to people about these restrictions.
Thanks, Dwali.
You're welcome.
North Texans got their first chance to weigh in on a proposed bullet train that would link Dallas and Houston in under 90 minutes. KERA's Bill Zeeble reports that 100 or so people at a meeting last night were united in their choice for where the train should stop in Dallas.
Texans love their cars and planes, especially when heading to other big distant cities like Houston. Last night, people got nearly giddy over the possibility of taking a high-speed train.
Because you can talk on a cell phone, you can actually work while you're commuting between both cities.
Businesswoman Raquel Olivier sometimes makes the Dallas to Houston trip weekly.
And it would be phenomenal for someone like me because I'm pretty sure it would be less expensive than taking the airlines.
Texas Central Railway officials promise it'll at least be competitive with flying, but it's too soon to talk fares for this privately funded venture. But where should the train stop? Consultants offered three Dallas options: the intersections of I-45 and Loop 12, I-45 and I-20, and the southwest edge of downtown Dallas. This crowd was united behind one choice.
We want the train speeding into Union Station.
Dallas City Councilwoman Vonceal Jones-Hill spoke for the mayor and city at last night's meeting. Fort Worth resident J.R. Price also chimed in for the station.
For expansion to DFW, to Oklahoma City, to Fort Worth, it would be so short-sighted to end it anywhere but Union Station because of all the connections that are already built in there.
Multiple options are being considered for Houston's stop as well. Rail consultant Jerry Smiley explained why two north-south options will now be studied for the preferred track route.
It's very straight, flat, undeveloped. As you add mountains or anywhere where you have to do tunnels, it becomes very cost prohibitive.
The two routes under consideration run parallel and to the west of I-45. As this project continues, computer programmer Michael Minden from SACSI wants the rail company to protect rural Texans as much as possible.
I hate to see someone's farm or ranch cut in half. You know, I see this too much on freeways where farmhouse on one side, lands on the other side, and a railroad like this you just cannot cross. So essentially will kill a farm or ranch.
Central Texas Railway officials say they're working to avoid that and will continue to take public comment. With an estimated cost north of $10 billion, they're also looking for more investors. If all goes well, the first train will carry passengers by 2021. Environmental impact and informational meetings continue through October. Bill Zeeble, KERA News.
A national group put a Dallas public art project, the White Rock Water Theater, at the top of its at-risk list today. The semicircle of light poles near the Bathhouse Cultural Center was designed as rest stops for birds, but the poles are now rusted, and some neighborhood groups want them gone. As KERA's Jerome Weeks reports, the artwork's future is uncertain.
It's called the Landslide List. It's compiled by the Cultural Landscape Foundation, which is committed to preserving landscape art and public art. The list showcases works the foundation fears are threatened with demolition, natural erosion, or just poor maintenance. And that's where the Water Theater comes in. The 63 metal poles were installed in 2001 near the Bathhouse Cultural Center by husband and wife artists Tom Orr and Frances Bagley. The poles were designed to attract wildlife so visitors could see birds and turtles feeding or sunning themselves. But the money to maintain the Water Theater, or any of Dallas' public artworks, was cut in 2009. It was the Great Recession.
There were cuts across the city to all city services, streets, libraries, rec centers, public art, knowing that there would perhaps be challenges in the future.
David Fisher is interim director of the city's Office of Cultural Affairs.
Very much like a street that would not have been maintained would be a point of public contention. That's what happened here. The piece, because of the lack of maintenance, deteriorated, and the public complained about it.
With the poles rusting and peeling, many visitors thought they were just a dilapidated dock. Neighborhood groups called for their removal. But in public meetings in the spring with the city's Cultural Affairs Commission, arts groups asked, can the Water Theater be repaired? No one knows. In cutting the maintenance of public artworks, Dallas even cut the staff to inspect them. That's changing, Fisher says. In September, the city council restored some of the budget for maintaining public artworks.
And with those funds, we knew that the first thing we'll be doing is an underwater engineering study of the piece to ascertain even the feasibility of repair.
Fisher sees the landslide list from the Cultural Landscape Foundation as part of the larger public conversation about what should be done with aging, difficult artworks. But artist Frances Bagley hopes the list can embarrass the city and prevent it from doing what's called deaccessioning. That means to sell off or get rid of an artwork in a collection.
Dallas is in the limelight as an art center now, and also for having a good economy. So for Dallas, it does not set a good precedent to deaccession a work that they commissioned and now can't take care of.
The Cultural Affairs Commission has tabled any vote on the future of the Water Theater until its February meeting. By then, engineers should know whether the old underwater concrete, part of the original swimming area at the bathhouse, can still be used to bolt down any new poles. Bagley says that's a crucial concern, and so is any estimated cost.
If, in fact, the engineering report comes back positive, and if the engineering report coincides with the estimates that have been received so far, then we will need to find some private money for the restoration of the water theater.
Those are several ifs. And the annual landslide list has not always nudged people to save artworks. 2 years ago, the Nasher Sculpture Center was on the list because of the damage to its garden supposedly caused by the reflected sunlight from Museum Tower. And that disagreement has certainly not been resolved. Jerome Weeks, KERA News.
You can like KERA News on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. From the KERA Newsroom, I'm BJ Austin.